So for our final speaker tonight, we have a roboticist in the house, and he will be presenting his robots to you and making them do amazing things. Prepare yourselves for Edwin Olson.
Hi, my name is Edwin Olson, and I have a cool job. I'm a roboticist. I like working with robots because it's so interdisciplinary. So for me, robotics is a great place to work because of all of the different things I get to play with.
When I can't find a robot with jet propulsion to save my life, I call Edwin Olson. Explosions, tsunamis, and refugees. I need a robot to rescue me. Why? Cause last week I got mugged by a Girl Scout. I want a robot to straighten the curls out, like cooperate and cause less commotion. Ladies and gentlemen, Edwin Olson.
Hey everybody, thank you so much. It's great to be here. My name is Edwin Olson. I'm a professor at the University of Michigan in the Computer Science Department. And basically my job is to look out in the world and figure out what sorts of problems there are that we can build robots to solve. So it doesn't matter a whole lot to me whether the robots are little arms operating on tabletops or whether they're big robots. I go around and I think about what sorts of problems do we have? Do you have a dirty room that you want to get cleaner? Let's get a robot to build it. Do you want to build a car that can drive itself? Let's do that. Maybe you're a musician and you want to have a robotic accompanist that can play the piano part as you play your violin. These are all cool problems that I like to solve, and I think I have a pretty cool job to do that. But it's fair to say that I have really robots on the brain. It's almost an affliction. And so you might wonder, how did I get to be this way? Well, there were early warning signs. Early warning signs. The kids in the audience all know what this is, but for the parents who are maybe a little rusty, this is clearly an interplanetary spaceship. I like building things. I still really like building things. I like to be able to hold something in my hand and say, yeah, that's mine. I also was really into computers. So at about the age of you guys, I started writing programs, and you just could not get me to stop writing programs. I was so enthusiastic about it. I did actually wear this, and I'd love to be able to tell you that it was Halloween. So at this point, I decided to go off into college and to study electrical engineering and computer science. Seemed like a good thing to do. So I discovered as I was doing this that robotics was the perfect combination of these two things. I could build the robots, and then I could program them. So I went through the bachelor's degree, and I built some pretty cool robots. And I came out the other end, and I was thinking, these robots are pretty cool, but they're pretty limited, too. So what I wanted to do was to build bigger, better, more complicated robots. So I hung around and got a master's degree. And so the master's degree, I built even bigger, cooler robots. And at the end of that, guess what happened? I was thinking, these robots are pretty cool, but I want to build cooler robots yet. So I hung around and got a PhD. And while I was doing a PhD, I built some of the coolest robots on the planet, I think. But then I look around and I see all these other problem domains where we could build robots that would be able to help people solve real problems that are important to society. So after getting the PhD, I decided, let's do the professor thing. Right? And so my job, again, is to basically look around for cool problems to solve with robots, build the robots, program them, and that's a pretty cool job. One of the robots that I built was this autonomous car. Now, who here can tell me what autonomous means? Yeah. Without humans, right. So this is a robot that makes its own decisions. You can see up on top, there's a bunch of crazy stuff attached to the roof rack. Those are sensors. So the first thing that you need to do if you're building a robot that can make its own decisions is be able to gather information about what the world looks like. Then all of this information goes back to a computer. We think, we try to figure out what all this information means and try to figure out what to do about it. So one of the things that we, since this is a car, the types of things that we might do are turn the steering wheel, press on the gas, press on the brake. Now, autonomous robots are, to me, part of the coolest kind of robots because there's a lot of things that we take for granted as humans. Let's try something very, very simple. Everybody point up. Yeah, most of you got that right. That's pretty simple, right? But this actually is a pretty hard problem. You're taking sensory data, you're processing it, combining data from multiple sensors, and actually using your muscles to point up, right? And you didn't have to work very hard at that, did you? It's pretty easy. If you're building a robot, none of that comes for free. You have to do all of that yourself. And that's part of the fun and part of the challenge. Let's try another one. Everybody point at the guy who's talking on stage. Yeah, that's me. This is another really complicated one. Now you're combining information about context, the sort of grammar of me standing on a stage. You're combining background information, visual information. When you look at me, your brain is just popping out and saying, person, right? And I'll couple all this together, it's really cool what humans can do. But again, robots don't start off with this ability. We have to implement all of these capabilities ourselves. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you some video of this car driving. And in a few seconds into the video, what you're going to see is the view of the world from the robot. And what you're going to see are a bunch of little circular patches. This is how the robot understands the world. It doesn't look at the world and see lanes, cars, people. It sees these little silly circular patches sliding around. Let's take a look. So here's our autonomous car. It's driving up to an intersection. It's collecting information about its surroundings. And here is that display I'm talking about, these little circles. And it's by tracking these circles that we're able to figure out things about where other cars are in the world. In this case, we're using that information to figure out that we've arrived at an intersection. It's a four-way stop sign, and the rules of the road tell us that we have to wait for all the other cars to go first before it's our turn to go. So these guys are out to catch us breaking the rules. They're waiting a very long time. Not New York drivers. But they clear the intersection, and our robot now is using its sensor information and it's deciding that now is the time to go. So it drives across the road. And what you can see right there is that there's nobody inside this vehicle. So this is an autonomous vehicle. I think it's one of the coolest kinds of vehicles, robots. I've been spending a lot of my time lately thinking about how groups of robots can address some of the problems in society. There's been a lot of bad news about tornadoes going through Moore, Oklahoma. You can see really a swath of devastation where the tornado went through. There's also a factory collapse where a lot of people were hurt. And one of the questions you might ask is, how can we use robots to solve these sorts of problems? And so the idea here is basically, let's build a group of robots. You can see our group of robots there. Send them in. They search the building. We're not putting humans in danger while we're looking for people who need help. When we find something, we can work alongside humans to go and render help. So there are other types of problems that are very similar to this. Anybody can think of an example? What's a problem that's kind of like search and rescue in terms of using multiple robots to go and find something cool? Yeah. Sunken ships, yeah, absolutely. So we use robots to go underwater and take a look at for example, the Titanic, yes. Yeah. Say it again. Building fires, absolutely. So very similar to search and rescue. You might also think about interplanetary exploration. Let's put a team of robots on Mars looking for rocks that the geologists find interesting. Or surveying, imagine environmental applications. Maybe there's a coral reef that's being hit hard by pollution. Let's build a group of robots that are going to monitor this coral reef, collect information, and tell us what's really going on. So we're really excited about this sort of a problem domain where multiple robots can work together. The other thing about these systems, which is kind of cool, is that they're autonomous, but they're actually semi-autonomous. One of the things that we want to do is figure out how can we bring humans back into the loop and take advantage of all of the knowledge that humans have in order to make the whole system work better. Right? In a search and rescue mission, the robots are out there looking for people, but there's still the ambulances or the geologists back home who want the samples that they're finding. So these problems all have something in common with each other. They're a lot like playing hide and seek. So the robots in this case are the seekers, and the things that we're looking for are the hiders. So I want to ask a question. If you want to be a champion hide-and-seek player, what capabilities do you need to play? And I'm thinking from the perspective of the seekers rather than the hiders. Yeah? That's great. So you need to be small to be able to hide under things. And we break that apart a little bit. You have to be able to recognize things, figure out how big they are, figure out whether your robot could fit, whether the thing that you're looking for could be underneath that object. Yeah, absolutely. Right next to you. I'm sorry, I can't hear you at all. Can you relay that for me? That's absolutely right. So here's a question for you. Is it easier to be the seeker playing hide and seek in your house or in a house that you've never been before? In your house. Why? Yeah. Because you know all of the good hiding spots. My two-year-old knows them very well, too. And so one of the important things that we want from a system like this is to be able to build a map of a new environment. Right? So we want to be able to send robots out, be able to have those robots explore, find all the good hiding spots that it didn't know about, and be able to help us find whatever we're looking for. All right, so I actually brought some of my robots here today to play hide and seek. I'd like to have our four volunteers come up on stage. Oh, you got four already down here. Fantastic. So what we're going to do is we're going to have two humans play the parts of the seekers, and the other two people are going to play the parts of the hiders. So just like it's harder to, let's do some introductions. Can you say your name and where you're from? Becca from New York.
Sam from New York.
Daniel, New York.
I'm noticing a trend. Daniel from New York.
Talia from New York.
Say it again.
Talia
from New York. Very good. So what we're going to do is we're going to have you two be our hiders. Does that sound good? And you two be our seekers. So the seekers go ahead and sit down with Lauren, who is one of my PhD students. And the hiders, what you get to do is actually two things. So we're going to first rearrange all these walls so that we know that the robot is in a new environment that it's never been before. And then we're going to find a hiding spot. You want to do it? All right. Mr. Simmons, can we have some good hiding music? All right. Come on, let's hide. So we can move these wherever you want. Should we? Yeah, go ahead. Drag him around. Yeah. That's good. That's good. Oh, that's a good hiding spot there. All right. You got a hiding spot already? Where'd she go? And since the robots aren't listening, she's right here. And we've got another one hiding right here. All right, so we are done hiding. Oh, I don't know if the robots will be able to squeeze through here, so I'm gonna rotate this. Are you cheating? There we go. Make sure that the robot's gonna be able to get around here. All right, so here's what we're gonna do. Let's switch over to the big display. What we're gonna look at now is the display that our seekers, who are using our robots as their helpers, are going to see. First thing you see is here are our robots over here, and they don't see a whole lot of the world, right? They see these surroundings immediately around them. And so one of the games is for them to go around and be able to look for the people. Now, to orient you a little bit, the top edge is the back of the stage. So it's like we're looking down on the world from above. This interface is actually inspired by computer games. And so you can see the two robots next to each other. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have one of our seekers command one of our robots to explore around a little bit. Now, the blue stuff represents obstacles. The white stuff represents stuff that we don't know what's there. And the orange represents area that we think it's safe to drive. All right, so let's go ahead and command one of these robots to drive around. So this is where that semi-autonomy comes into play. The robots are making a lot of decisions on their own, including once they're told where to go. So we're basically clicking on a robot and then clicking again where we want them to go. All right. So we're going to command it to go somewhere. All right. So the basic idea here is that the humans are suggesting places for the robots to go, and the robot's job is to figure out how to actually get from point A to point B. So they're looking out for obstacles. They're actually also looking for the kids. So if we can go back to the map display, Let's get these robots moving around. We've got both of the robots now in action, looking around. And great, so let's send these robots out hunting for these hiders. Right, and you can see that as the robots spread out, they're collecting information about what they see, and that information is being transmitted back to our seekers at the computer station. So as the robots move around, they're collecting more and more information about what the environment really looks like. And you can see the orange areas growing bigger and bigger. Oh, and what is that? One of those robots has found one of our hiders. All right, so I think it's found. Hi there, you've been found. Good job. You can stand up, but stay right there for a minute. All right. Now let's continue looking. Oh, I got to get out of the way. Let's continue looking around for the second hider. So you can see that the robot is really deciding what it wants to do itself. It's not just going to the arrow. Its goal is to get to the little star, but it's going to find the safest path that it can to get there. And you can see that we're getting some video feed from that robot. It's very low quality. One of the big challenges in a system like this is actually to use as little radio bandwidth as possible. So we oftentimes talk about the fact that we can run this system in, you know, maybe a kilobyte per second between the entire fleet of robots. And you get the idea from this sort of system. If you were exploring a new building and you knew you were looking for something, imagine that you, sitting over there, actually have 20 robots with you. Did we find? Oh, we found the other one. All right, fantastic. Great, so let's give a big round of applause to our hiders. And a big round of applause to our seekers who very ably operated our system. Good job, thank you everybody. So how many of you think this would be a useful system if you were looking for something in a building? Yeah. Building a system like this is a lot of fun. So let's go to my next slide. Let's imagine that you now agree with me that I have a cool job. One question you might ask yourself is, how do I get a job like this? And how many of you like math? How many of you not such a big fan? Right, so robotics is almost all mathematics. So the more math you know, whether it's geometry, trigonometry, algebra, it's all going to come to bear when programming a robot. So one of the things you need to do in order to become a roboticist is really be an expert at math, all kinds of math. Another skill that you need is to be able to work with a computer, in particular, being able to program. And the best way to become a good programmer is to write lots and lots of programs. So I started programming when I was in fourth grade. I sold my first computer program when I was in sixth grade. So I just keep writing programs, whether it's getting an Arduino or Lego Mindstorms. The more code you write, the better you're going to get. And the last thing that you need in order to be a good roboticist is some fire in your belly. Right? You need to have passion for some problem that you really want to solve. And maybe for you, it's the problem of making cars safer so that people don't get into accidents. Or maybe for you, you're really motivated by sending robots to Mars to look for interesting rocks. Right? But at the end of the day, you need to have some passion that's going to drive you to build these really complicated systems that can do cool stuff like this. So if you find your passion, and you develop the skills that you need in order to pursue that passion, before you know it, you'll have a cool job too. Thank you very much.
Applause one more time for Edwin Olson. Can we get everyone else to the stage, please? Amanda Kinchler with the food science. Michelle Kine and her lovely assistant, Laura Lai. Smaller is better. Catherine Isbister with the video game designs, Holly Robbins, Jamie Simmons on the turntables, Miss V on the B-girl action, And if you guys are looking for something to do next right now, there's amazing action happening right outside at the World Fair that's happening, the fair in the park. And what's happening actually starting right now at 12:30 is a thing called Eat, Play, Learn, which includes the main chef from the White House looking at some science and food. And also, was anyone here at Cool Jobs last year? Do you remember Wendy Suzuki, who had the real human brain, and she got you to exercise and showed you how it changed your brain? She's part of the Eat, Play, Learn thing outside at 12:30. And also, we have the world-famous basketball player Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at 2:30 at the LaGuardia stage right outside. So hang out, be part of the fair. It's going to be amazing. And you guys need to go out now and be the next generation of scientists. They're going to change the world. Hope you had a fantastic time. One more time for all of our presenters. Thank you.